podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and a warm welcome along to the Punt podcast, which has an international flavour this week as we get down to the business end of the European qualifiers for the 2018 World Cup. And later on the podcast, we'll talk England strikers with the Sunday Mirror's chief sports reporter, Tom Hopkinson. Should Harry Kane be England captain? Does it matter? And why has Daniel Sturridge's career nosedived? It's not all about the internationals, though. We have fixtures in Leagues 1 and 2, and Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross have their best bets, and Sam Norris picks out his best European football bet this weekend as well. But first, it's my absolute pleasure to be joined on the podcast by a staple. It's a good evening to Derek McGovern. Good evening to you, sir.
And the same to you, Dave, but we're international football. Can't wait to get my teeth into it.
We'll start with England's match against Slovenia, which is Thursday night, 7:45. Andy Excel, unfortunately, is still holidaying. He can't be with us this week. England are 4-11 to win this match. The draw 7-2 with Slovenia in the betting at 9-1. Enhanced odds, Harry Kane to score, England to win, both teams to score, was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And I was actually reasonably impressed with the performance of England against Slovakia in their most recent international, Derek. They looked like the away side in the opening half hour of that match. But after Stanislav Lobotka got the opening goal 3 minutes in, Marcus Rashford made up for his error and they extended their lead over Slovakia at the top of Group F to 5 points with a win in that game. Slovenia, in their last international, beat Lithuania 4-0. And it was the England we all know and love in the reverse fixture when these two teams met, when it finished 0-0. But Derek, I actually saw something that made me not excited about England, but less pessimistic than I have been in the past last time out.
Did you? Well, I must have been watching a different game. I thought they struggled to get over the line in that game. In fact, I was chuckling when the Slovaks went in front, because there's nothing about England that I support anymore. I find them an impediment to my enjoyment of football. You know, they get in the way of the Premier League. You watch them, you have to watch them because we've grown up watching them, and you just know what you're going to be, 90 minutes of pure boredom. And it'll be like this again. Everyone's saying England only need to win one more match to qualify as group winners, but they probably don't even need that, to be honest. There's a healthy gap already between them and the second team, Slovakia. And Slovakia aren't going to pick up 2 wins in the last 2 games because they're not that kind of team. So it doesn't really matter a hill of beans what this result is. England will qualify. All I would say about Slovenia is that they're not the mugs everyone thinks, although England are. They held England to a goalless draw in Slovenia recently. Last year. They've only conceded 4 goals in their 8 qualifiers to date. But a team, that's no great shakes. That's not a bad defensive record. A little known fact about Slovenia, Dave, 70% of its population can speak 2 foreign languages. You didn't know that, did you? Did you know what someone who speaks 2 languages is called?
Go on, bilingual.
Bilingual. Do you know what someone who speaks 3 languages is called?
Is it trilingual?
Do you know what someone who speaks only 1 language is called?
Go on.
English. You know what, this game, if it wasn't for Harry Kane, I wouldn't be watching this game. I love watching him play. If he was injured, he'd be preparing for a World Cup qualifier with players of the calibre of Daniel Sturridge, Jermaine Defoe and Jesse Lingard as your striking options. I just can't see a bag full of goals in this. I know England have won their last 13 home qualifiers for the Euros and the World Cups going back to, 5 years now, 10 of those wins coming to nil. So, you know, there's a definite stats on your side there for an England to win to nil bet. And in fact, of their 4 wins over Slovenia, they've played 5 times, won 4 of them. 3 of them have come by at a 1-goal margin. So a 1-0 win for England, I think it's about 11-2, will be a popular bet. But have you been looking at the more recent results of Slovenia? In their away games, they lost 1-0 in both of them to the other two decent sides in the section, Scotland and Slovakia. And those goals were scored after the 80th minute. So I'm suggesting draw a half-time, England full-time at around about 3-1, 7-2 could be the way to play.
Do have a look at that double result market. Draw half-time, England full-time is in the market at 3-1 currently. Tottenham midfielder Dele Alli will obviously miss this match after FIFA handed him a one-match ban after the TV cameras caught him making that offensive gesture during England's 2-1 win against Slovakia last month, so he will miss this game. Harry Kane, by the way, is 9-4 to score first. He's 7-10 to score any time, and he's 3-1 to score two or more, and he seemingly gets two or more in every single match now, so that 3-1 could look good. Let's move on to Scotland versus Slovakia. This is a 7:45 kickoff on Thursday. Scotland 7-5 to win the match. The draw 21-10. Slovakia 21-10. Enhanced odds: Lee Griffiths to score and Scotland to win was 12-5. That's been enhanced to 5-2. And Marek Hamšík to score and Slovakia to win was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 5-1. Scotland have Slovakia and Slovenia in their last two group games, and given their travel to Ljubljana in their last group game, it's imperative that they grab 3 points in this one. But, as I mentioned earlier, England, in the opening half hour, were outclassed by Slovakia at Wembley, and this Slovakia team did put Scotland to the sword in the reverse fixture, Derek, winning 3-0.
Yes, they did. One of those games that seems to have been played 100 times. And Slovakia turned up to play England and Slovenia turned up to play Scotland instead of the other way around. Who'd notice? England is still winning. Probably Scotland would still lose. That's just one of those fixtures that you think, oh, just get it over with. You'd have to say, from what I've seen from Scotland in recent internationals and from what I've seen of Slovakia, which admittedly is little, if there's going to be a winner here, it will be Slovakia. But Four of Scotland's last seven home games have ended in a draw. It's looking to me like a draw again here. If either side loses, they're probably out of the race, aren't they, for second place, you would think? Mm. I would suggest so. I think it's the main motive in this is to avoid defeat. I can see a draw being a very, very big player in this one.
And if you're looking at the goal scorer markets, Lee Griffiths is one that you've got to have a look at. He's 5-4 to score any time. He's 7-2 to score first and 7-2 to score last in the game as well. He's been involved in 6 goals in his last 3 internationals for Scotland, scoring 3 in that spell as well. And maybe look for a late Scotland goal if you're betting in play here. 71% of Scotland's goals, which is 10 of 14, have been scored in the second half. And 5 of those have come in the last 5 minutes of the match as well. So Scotland have been late smash and grab merchants in this qualifying campaign. So if you're betting in play, look at Scotland to get a late goal in the game. I must admit though, Derek, Slovakia's price at over 2-1 does look attractive to me, given that I've seen, like you, not much of these two nations, but I've seen enough from Slovakia to suggest they have the beating of Scotland.
Yeah, well, if they perform like they did in the first half against England, yes, I thought they looked it. But when I was watching that, I remember thinking, this is a much better side than anybody's given them credit for. They fell off a cliff somewhat in the second half. But if they were to reproduce that, they'll beat Scotland.
Northern Ireland versus Germany now. Northern Ireland 11-1 to win this match. The draw 4-1, Germany 2-7. Enhanced odds, Connor Washington to score and Northern Ireland to win was 14-1. That's been enhanced to 16-1. Thomas Muller to score and Germany win was 11-10. That's been enhanced to 6-5. Northern Ireland, Derek, bound to finish second in the group, which will still be a major achievement for Michael O'Neill and his men. They've only conceded 2 goals, which is the same as Germany in the group, and they're only 5 points behind Germany, which is no mean achievement. To win the group, they would have to beat Germany at Windsor Park and then hope Germany lost to Azerbaijan in the final group game in Kaiserslautern, which I think is about the same price as you having a winning nap, Derek.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Voted confidence there. You speak of a man who's just, a third winning nap on the run you've had, haven't you, on the podcast? Well done to you.
Okay. I wasn't going to mention it, Derek.
I mean, Northern Ireland, Jesus. I mean, what have they been doing? They still seem to have the same, you look at the team sheets and they still seem to have the same rubbishy players, and yet they just keep qualifying for major tournaments and doing well while there. It's quite incredible. I mean, this game, there's nothing really at stake, is there? I mean, you say Northern Ireland know they're not going to win the group, but they are definitely going to finish second no matter what happens. Germany are definitely going to win the group no matter what happens. So what's in it for them, you'd have to say. Germany always beat UK teams in our national sport, but on the other side of the coin, Dave, we beat them twice in theirs. I'm actually thinking Ireland will defend so deep in this, they may be at risk from a German U-boat. You know, that's the Northern Irish way, isn't it? Whenever they play against a big team, and they always get results you don't expect when they're put up against a big team. They're playing against a team who, as I just outlined, whose commitment might be questionable. There's a school of thought here that might say Ireland at 11-1 under the circumstances might be worth a bet, especially if German football's under a bit of a cloud at the moment. Bayern Munich struggling, one or two of the other teams struggling in Europe too. Germany, a couple of years ago, they were beaten by the Republic of Ireland in Dublin in a Euro 2016 qualifier. So, you know, it wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world if Northern Ireland were to beat them. But what I would do is go for the Irish with a goal start, because I really don't think Germany are going to turn up there looking for victory. When what's in it for them? They're going to qualify as group winners anyway.
Northern Ireland plus one is 5-2. If you like Northern Ireland plus two, that's in the market at 17-20. Michael McGovern, by the way, has kept more clean sheets than any other goalkeeper in this qualifying campaign. 7 clean sheets he's kept in the qualifiers so far. I was looking at something like Germany under 2.5 goals, but it's 11-20, Derek, which is a little bit on the skinny side. But I can see Germany not getting more than 2 in this game.
No. Well, the boy McGovern's doing fantastic, and go like, McGovern never gives anything away. I mean, he was sensational in the Euros last year, whenever it was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. If someone said you've got to have a bet on a correct score here, I'd go for 0-0.
With the major leagues across Europe taking a break this weekend, I'm delving into the second tier of Spanish football for this week's nap. Almeria take on Huesca at 5 p.m. on Saturday in the Segunda, with both sides having made a promising start to the league campaign. They occupy the final two playoff spots after 7 games with 11 points apiece, and it's a game that looks very evenly matched on league standings, but when you delve into the respective home and away form, it's clear to see why there is a clear favourite for this match. Almeria's home form this season has been superb. They're unbeaten in the last 7 games at home, winning 6 of those, and have already taken maximum points from 2 of their 3 home matches this season. And whilst Huesca are more accustomed to this lofty league position, they drew a blank in this fixture last season and have lost 2 of their last 3 away games this year, collecting just 1 point. This all points to a home win for me, and Almeria look a fair price at 6-5 in the Segunda this weekend.
Georgia versus Wales next. This is Friday, 5 p.m. Georgia 4-1 to win it. The draw 9-4, Wales 4-5. And the enhanced odds for Hal Robson-Kanu to score and Wales to win was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1, and it's Wales without Gareth Bale. Their talisman has been ruled out for the final two group games. Might not matter away at Georgia, but they're only 4-5 to win this game, Derek, and it could be a deciding factor in what could ultimately prove to be a straight fight for second place in the group when they host the Republic of Ireland in that last group match. And this will be the 5th time these two sides have met, or these two nations have met, and Wales have never beaten Georgia, losing the first 3 before drawing 1-1 in the reverse fixture back in October 2016. So Wales without Gareth Bale, Mr. McGovern.
I know. And I mean, it's an incredibly poor record as well against Georgia, isn't it?
Yeah,
you think they're one of the whipping boys of a group, but they're not. When you think of Georgia, one question keeps cropping up. What's the point? The same could be said about Wales, by the way. Georgia is one of those nations that you try not to think about, Dave, but you know, where deep down you're fairly certain something unpleasant happens on an hourly basis. An Eastern European version of Wales, if you like. I mean, I can't back Wales at odds on away from home with no Gareth Bale in their side. Even with Gareth Bale in the side, I think twice about that. But particularly against a side like this, who, you know, it's one of those places that if you're an international footballer, you don't want to go to. You really don't. It's going to be, you know, the Georgias, the Moldovas, games like that. you just want to get it over with. This looked like, to me, like a nailed on 0-0 draw, which won't do Wales much good, but that's what's going to happen.
I agree. The draw 9-4, the 0-0 draw, by the way, is 13-2. Georgia have drawn 5 of their 8 matches in this group. They have lost the other 3, by the way. But as mentioned, Wales did fail to beat Georgia in the reverse fixture at the Cardiff City Stadium. And we finish with the Republic of Ireland versus Moldova. And the Republic are 1-12 to win this game. The draw 7-1, Moldova 20-1. Shane Long to score, the Republic of Ireland to win, and both teams to score was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 7-1. Hashtag your odds available on these international matches as well. So if you tweet in your bet to @WilliamHill using the hashtag your odds, the traders will price it up. And Moldova's record reads, played 8, lost 6, drawn 2, scored 4 and conceded 20. So this should be plain sailing for the Republic. And those two draws, by the way, for Moldova came against the draw specialist in the group, Georgia. This is a matter of where you try and extract the value, I suppose, Derek, because they're 1-12 to win the match, the Republic.
And win it, they will. I mean, the alternative doesn't bear thinking about. This is a great chance for them to overhaul Wales.
Yeah.
If Wales fail to beat Georgia, which we know we've already talked about, and I don't think they will beat them, the Republic will go second with a game to go. I mean, that's a massive thing for them. Moldova is the poorest country in Europe. In fact, it's so poor that the capital of Moldova is about €6. It's just one of those, one of those teams that they're always in, normally end up in England's group, and England normally beat them 4-0 at Wembley and then 1-0 away from home. Republic of Ireland will win this, but these odds, Ireland will win and they won't concede. It's another 3-0, 4-0 job, isn't it, really? That's all you can go for. They're not the team they used to be, the Republic, are they? And then, 2 or 3 years ago, you'd fancy them all day long to get, a few in this one. But I think maybe they'll look at this as a 3-0 win would be a good result for them. Put them in second spot, probably, if Wales don't win, and all set up for the that big showdown to come. So that's what I'm going to go for. A correct score, Republic of Ireland 3, Moldova 0.
Dave Kellner is a new man. New exercise regime, new diet, newfound betting expertise. Whoa, oh, oh. 4 from 8 winning naps this season, and last weekend had Stoke at 19-10 to go just under £50 profit. Michael Lumley joined the podcast last week from the William Hill trading team. Couldn't change their luck, though, with another loser. Speaking of losers, I'll pick for them this week in a minute. The last time Derek had a winning nap, his jokes were topical. Even Al Ross can't find a winner, but he is clinging on to profit. He's £7 in the black. So, my nap. I was going to go for a draw in the Wales game, or maybe Iceland to win, but realised they're both mug bets. So I'll go draw half-time, England full-time, against a defensively tight Slovenia side who've conceded 4 goals in their 8 World Cup qualifiers and held England 0-0 at their place. 3-1 for draw half-time, England full-time.
Now it's time, Derek, for your nap this week. What is your best bet on the coupon? I won't remind you the last time the international action rolled around. Can you remember that, Derek?
What did I have? Oh, I do. Yes, I did. I had Italy to beat Spain, didn't I?
You did.
What an absolute disaster that was. You're supposed to put winning naps on matches that, teams that you don't really see that much of, do you? It's tough. Who are you going for? Let me see who your nap is first.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going. I'm going for one that we've already mentioned, Derek, which I really like, and you agree with me, which gives me pause for thought momentarily, but I'll go with it anyway. I'm going Georgia-Wales to be a draw. Yeah, I think it's a stick on 9-4 for Georgia versus Wales to end all square. So that's my nap selection.
Okay, well, I mean, I wouldn't argue with that one. But I need a decent price winner, given my recent run. And whenever I go for naps around a 3-1 mark, I'm pretty sure my success rate is okay. Well, certainly not as bad as it normally is. I'm going to go for Iceland to win in Turkey, 16-5 Iceland. We saw what they did against England last year. They're not the mugs those odds imply, are they? 16-5. Anyone can, going to Turkey and winning is not hard. I reckon Iceland will do it.
The draw at 9-4, Georgia versus Wales, Turkey versus Iceland, Iceland to win at 16-5. That double on the punt this week pays 12.65-1.
It's the second hashtag Sav Acca international one, which the first one won. Ooh, it was quite good odds as well. So, can I get 2 out of 2 in my international hashtag Sav Acca? Here we go. England to beat Slovenia. Scotland to beat Slovakia. Germany to beat Northern Ireland. Georgia v Wales draw. And finally, the Republic of Ireland to beat Moldova. Hashtag Sav Acca on Twitter at William Hill.
The Sunday Mirror's chief sports reporter Tom Hopkinson joins myself and Derek on the line now. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Tom.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, chaps.
How are you, Tom?
Very well, actually. Thank you very much. Enjoying the memories of a very good game at Chelsea and Manchester City on Saturday. Always a pleasure to be at a game like that.
Were you surprised how well City played?
I wasn't. I was more surprised how disappointing, how defensive Chelsea were. I thought on the back of a very good week in which they'd won two tough games, they might have gone for it a little bit more against City. But not surprised by how well City played. Certainly going forward, maybe John Stones and Otamendi were a lot more solid than I was expecting. But a tremendous performance from them.
Looking forward to these international games, Tom. There's been a lot written in the press over the last couple of days about the England captaincy and whether Harry Kane should get it or not. Does it really matter? Should we really care about things like that, or should we be focusing on actually making an impact at a major tournament?
Yes, we should care about it. I'm very much a traditionalist when it comes to the captaincy. I think we need that leader, that figure to build it around, and you know, someone who will sit in front of the press before a game and be the man, as Wayne Rooney was, as Steven Gerrard was, as David Beckham was, and you know, going back over the years, who when things were good or bad would you know, put his head above the parapet and say, look, this is what's happening with the team, this is our thoughts. So yeah, I think very much we'd like a captain. We'd like a captain who was leading a very successful side into the World Cup finals. I mean, obviously doing better at a major final is more important than the captaincy, but as a standalone issue, I certainly think it's an important factor around the side. And I think it gives Gareth Southgate, you know, I know he's talked about having many leaders in and around the dressing room and on the field, but I think it gives him that one figure to sort of work with, you know, and develop the bond with. And if you have to, if he's not playing well, if you have to drop him, then so be it. You know, he shouldn't be bulletproof just because he's got the captaincy. You know, I think there are times later on in Wayne Rooney's career where people thought he was only getting in because he had the armband. But I think that's got to be made clear to him whoever gets the job, that can't be the case. Should it be Harry Kane? He's certainly a very mature figure around the dressing room, and he would probably get the vote of a lot of people. I'm not so sure. I don't know what you think, Del, but I've always thought that a centre forward should be left with the job of scoring goals, and he doesn't perhaps get the same view, the same vantage point of a game that a centre half or a central midfielder will get.
Yeah, quite right. A striker should never be captain, you know, without doubt. It should always be a midfielder or a defender in my eyes. Kane would be the worst captain since Captain Antonio, I think, because captains, by their very nature, cannot be selfish. It's the team that comes first. A striker, and particularly Harry Kane, it's all about selfishness. Scoring goals, that's all that matters. He'd be a disastrous choice as captain. And one other thing that Tom pointed out earlier, when you're England captain, you have to have a certain eloquence. I mean, okay, I know that Gerrard and Rooney were rough and ready scousers, but they, you know, they could handle themselves in front of the press. Harry Kane's interview and technique leaves an awful lot to be desired. I suppose one plus for him is that if he did become captain, he wouldn't lose it for off-the-field shenanigans like some others have. I mean, when John Terry lost the armband a few years ago, it was found under Wayne Bridges' bed. One or two others have had their problems. Kane wouldn't do that. But I don't think. I think also you could argue that, and it's happened in cricket as well, if you give someone like Kane the captaincy, the burden of that weighs them down. They're not quite the same player. Some players relish captaincy. It brings out the best in them. Mm. I'm not sure that would be the case with Harry Kane.
Tom, are you surprised how well Harry Kane has performed? I mean, his goal scoring record is now, it's just sensational, and he's scoring at the sort of rate you'd expect Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo to score at. He's been phenomenal.
We're scoring at the sort of rate you wouldn't expect anyone to score at, to be fair, Dave. I mean, I was looking at the statistics last week, and it was something like 32 goals in all competitions 3 years ago, 32 goals in all competitions 2 years ago, and 38 last season in only 41 games. I mean, it's an incredible record. I think everyone's got to be surprised by that because, you know, it was just the way he exploded onto the scene. You know, look, it's no surprise to see him scoring goals again this year because he proved last season that it wasn't just going to be for 1 year. But the rate of knots that he's getting these goals is just quite extraordinary. It just goes to show, and I'm a huge believer in this, that if players go off and they're not mollycoddled through the youth systems, if they go off and play in lower leagues and learn how to adapt to different styles of football, learn how to get kicked all over the park by a big meathead centre-half in League One or in the Championship, it might not feel great at the time, but it's that all-round part of your game that it's like in any company. You know, if the chief executive started out in the mailroom, he's always going to have had a better idea of how the whole industry works, the whole company works. And I think Harry Kane is absolutely benefiting now from those years when he was toiling around the lower leagues.
I'm just thinking about what you two chaps said about the captaincy, maybe it being either a keeper or a centre-half or a central midfielder. And I'm looking through the list of the England players, Derek. I'm not sure there's another candidate. That's probably the issue.
Jordan Henderson is probably the only other one, but he wouldn't be a shoo-in for a regular choice, whereas Harry Kane is. So it is difficult, without question. But it's not a big thing in other countries, though. And having this figurehead captain that we've had over the years, going back to Beckham and Terry and Rooney and Gerrard, it ain't done us that much good, has it? So, you know, why not? Why not just have a revolving armband?
There's always the Italian way of doing it, isn't there? The player with the most caps, the most senior player gets the armband. But I don't know. I mean, look, Gary Cahill, been there. He's won everything with Chelsea Football Club. You can't tell me that he's not got the experience to be a very good captain. Played alongside John Terry, knows how teams should be led. Very different character to John Terry, but he's very, very good when he deals with the press, Gary. Always enjoy talking to him, a very nice fella. And again, not the sort of character that I think you would worry about too much. You know, you're not going to find him on CCTV footage of him outside a paper chase in Bristol anytime soon. So there are the characters. Derek mentioned Jordan Henderson. Yes. Why not give it to Dele Alli as well? I know in one of the papers today, Stan Collymore in the Mirror today, saying that Dele Alli would be a great shout to be the England captain. You know, why not give it to one of these lads and say, now go on, you know, take it. Don't be afraid of it. Go and flourish.
Do you think Dele Alli is just too volatile for that, though, Tom?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, look back at how the impact it had on David Beckham when he took over. I mean, look, and we're not. What was Dele Alli actually done? I mean, he gave somebody the middle finger in a game, whether it was the referee or whether it was Kyle Walker, as he claimed. Look, only he knows who he was actually giving it to. But you know, we're not talking about someone who's gone out and committed some sort of heinous crime. And yes, look, there's the odd dive, but it might just be the catalyst that helps him grow up. So I wouldn't be against seeing him get the armband at all.
Okay, I want to finish with a discussion about Daniel Sturridge, who is at the moment at the other end of the spectrum as far as England strikers are concerned when we've been talking about Harry Kane. And I was looking back through past articles written about Daniel Sturridge, Derek, and Brendan Rodgers said a couple of years ago he was going to be better than Harry Kane. We should really have predicted what was going to happen subsequently. Is he a show pony, Daniel Sturridge, or is that too harsh?
Well, he's been in a lot of big clubs and hasn't really done it, has he, apart from one season at Liverpool. And that makes you question just how good was Luis Suarez to make him look that good. I mean, Suarez also made Raheem Sterling look good that season as well. It's what I always say when anyone ever questions Steven Gerrard's ability. For two seasons, he made Fernando Torres look like a player. That can happen. It can happen. Now, Sturridge, whatever he had, has gone. Injuries have taken their toll. I mean, he's not young anymore. He's in the twilight of his career. And that generally means two things. The goals dry up and you fall in love with a vampire. I just don't think he's not a regular player. He's always injured. In fact, before he joined Liverpool, he asked about Liverpool's ambition. It's hunger and it's sick pay. That's how injured he is all the time. In fact, he's so lazy. If he could live his life all over again, he'd ask someone else to do it for him. I just can't have somebody who goes on the pitch like Sturridge
and expect scoring one goal maybe is enough. That's not enough now in this day and age. Strikers have to do more than score goals. My only surprise about Sturridge is that he wasn't bombed out of Anfield in the summer.
Do you know what, Dale? I wonder if Sturridge had too much too soon. You know, coming through the academy at Manchester City, then moving on very quickly on big money to Chelsea as well. Yes, look, I know he went off on loan to Bolton for a year, but it just goes back to what we were talking about with Harry Kane and that hunger that, you know, he must have been instilled in him by dressing rooms. You can't go to Millwall. You can't go to Leyton Orient or Leicester when they were in the Championship, and Norwich, of course, was the other club. You can't go to any of those clubs and not give 100%, you know, because you haven't got lads around you who are as talented as the players that Daniel Sturridge was coming through on, who can perhaps rely more on their technical ability and talent alone. It was all about the graft, you know, and making sure you put a shift in, and Kane had that instilled in him. And I wonder if Daniel Sturridge had as well, you know, whether he missed out perhaps on that grounding. But it's a really good point you make about the fact that he had Luis Suarez playing alongside him. I mean, I know I've spoken to Premier League defenders away from interview situations, and they've said, look, you know, Suarez was that good. It was taking at least two of us to go off and mark him. So it was leaving Sturridge and Raheem Sterling in acres of space. Now, look, they've still got to put in the performances that they put in. They had great seasons, both Sterling and Sturridge, alongside Suarez. But as you said, when you're playing with a player of Suarez's calibre, I think any of the three of us would be scoring goals alongside them as well.
And to pick up on another point, Tom, that Derek made there, surprised that Daniel Sturridge is still at Liverpool Football Club, because he doesn't really fit the mould of what Jurgen Klopp wants to achieve. He loves his players to press high up the pitch, and the defending starts from the front line, and Daniel Sturridge is never going to put in 100% work rate, say like a Firmino.
I think the big question is, where does Daniel Sturridge go next? I mean, you're absolutely right. He doesn't automatically fit the bill of a Jurgen Klopp player, although I think Klopp, there's going to be some forgiveness there because of just how good a finisher, a natural finisher, Daniel Sturridge is. But clearly, Klopp hasn't got the faith in Daniel Sturridge, whether it's the physicality of Daniel Sturridge's game, the ability to go through seasons without picking up injuries, which he hasn't proved that he can do, or whether he's got the mental strength that Jurgen Klopp feels he needs that he can rely on. I don't think we'll see Sturridge at Liverpool long term, you know, for another 2 or 3 years. I certainly think it's a situation that they'll reassess in January or in the transfer window when it opens next summer. But I just wonder who's going to take him. You know, he's on big money. He's always earned big money throughout his career, and he might just say, do you know what, I'm happy to keep picking up this big money and not worrying too much about going elsewhere. But I hope he doesn't. I hope he looks at it and says, do you know what, maybe I'll go to a Stoke, maybe I'll go to an Everton, somewhere like that. I mean, it'd be a very good shout for Everton to come in for him in January and see whether he'd cross Stanley Park. But someone like West Ham maybe just needs to go to a club like that that could really rejuvenate his career.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
So my League One selection this weekend starts with a question. Which team would you have as the favourite? Team 1, who have 13 points out of 33 available, or Team 2, who have 29 points out of 33 available? I think most people would choose Team 2, but not the traders. They have deemed Walsall the favourites to beat Shrewsbury at home, and I disagree. So Shrewsbury are just too big at 15-8 to win away at Walsall, who are 6-4. The draw is a play in this one at 11-5. If it is going to be a draw, it's going to be a draw with goals. Walsall at home, no defeats in 5, and they've drawn 3 of the last 4. The draws 3-3, 1-1 and 2-2. But Shrewsbury are looking for their fourth consecutive victory in League One on the road, having won 2-1 at Gillingham, 2-1 at Oldham, and 2-1 at Doncaster Rovers. So if Shrewsbury are going to come and win here, they're going to win with goals in the game. Shrewsbury to win and over 2.5 goals is very tempting at 100-30. There is no stopping Shrewsbury at the moment. So my nap selection is Shrewsbury draw no bet at evens. It quite simply is too big. Looking at League Two now, here's Al Ross. Whoa!
Options this week. It appears League 2 has finally reverted to type if last week's results are anything to go by. Notts County and Luton a bit short to be a proper nap, so I'm going for the early kickoff and taking Coventry at Barnet. Yes, it's partly a pro-Coventry bet. At the end of last month, Exeter and Swindon were two of the best teams in the league. Coventry beat them. Since then, they've added Crewe and they won in midweek in the trophy at Walsall, albeit on penalties, having made 10 changes. Two of those changes, though, a chance to bring back Mark McNulty and Stuart Bevan from injury. So four wins in a row, and it's all positive for Coventry. This, however, is really an anti-Barnet bet. They were in the trophy in midweek as well, part of what I can only assume was a gamble that completely backfired. A Barnet side who'd lost four of their last five at home, and to a really poor Crawley side last time out. They'd also lost four of their last five anywhere, and they put out the strongest side they could in the trophy, looking for a win against Luton's reserves. 11 changes and two debutants for them. And Barnet were outplayed and lost on penalties. If confidence wasn't rock bottom before, it surely is now. Both teams have scored in Barnet's last 9 fixtures, so Coventry and both teams to score 18-5 is great value, but the nap is the simple outright, and that is Coventry at 13-10.
That was Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross on Leagues 1 and 2, respectively, and that brings us to the end of the podcast for this week. Thank you for joining us, and make sure you check out all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com, or alternatively, go to iTunes and check out the latest betting as well, of course, at sports.williamhill.com. I'm sure there'll be some offers coming up over the course of the next few days on the international action as well, so make sure you do bookmark the website, sports.williamhill.com. Thank you to Tom Hopkinson, Derek McGovern, who were with us earlier on as well, for their insight into the international action. And that's it. We'll be back for the second round of international fixtures on the Punt Podcast on Saturday. If you're having a bet, good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.